staff, sponsors, and supporters of the station you happen to be listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests. And tonight our guest is Bob Chapin. Now, please hold your calls for the time being. If we need callers, I will invite you to call later in the program. But Bob writes the international forecaster. He's been at the game even longer than I have, and that's an awful long time. And we're going to be talking about what's going on in the financial markets. Now, well, we actually have this last week commented on some special reports that come out from the government. They come out from the Federal Reserve System, and they give the total debt of our nation. Those figures, they're sometimes called the zip figures or the Z figures, but basically what they show is the total debt of the United States, federal debt, state debt, local debt, the private debt, the house debt, car debt. The debt as of December of last year was $40,600,000,000,000. 3 months later, at the end of March of this year, it was $41.6 trillion. In other words, we'd increased our debt by $1 trillion. Now, that isn't money. That is debt. We massive increase in credit and in debt. In 3 months, $1 trillion. People have no concept of what that is. Bob, tell us, what's your take on what's happening, this massive extension of debt and credit that's going on?
Well, I continue to tell the subscribers that money supply is important, and, of course, we only get to see M2. We don't get to see M3 anymore because they don't allow us to see that. And so we have to watch the issuance of credit very closely. The last time that we saw the extension of issuance of money was around the 15th of March. And so it's been almost 3 months. And at that time, they had been increasing the money supply at about 10.5%. Now, the figures for the first quarter just came out, and in the next issue of the International Forecaster, we have the breakdown of the issuance of credit through financial, non-financial institutions, real estate, securities, and on and on and on. And the figures are the way that you just called them on a net basis, and that is an increase of $1 trillion from the previous quarter. I mean, these figures are exponential. They are just absolutely mind-numbing. And nothing has ever happened in this economy like this before under the Fed Reserve or anybody else. And consequently, there is absolutely no way that we cannot have a financial blow-off and hyperinflation. And I see the economy slowing, so I believe that a slowing economy and higher inflation is stagnation and inflation. And the word for that, which was coined many years ago by Harry Schultz, is stagflation. And that's what we're headed into.
And that's sort of the worst of all worlds, isn't it?
It certainly is, because your wages and salary are falling, the value of assets are falling, and at the same time, you have stock markets and bond markets falling. The only thing in a stagflation situation that appreciates is commodities and gold and silver.
And, of course, we're basically talking about ensuring that inflation is going to continue for some time before the whole thing really begins to implode. And they know exactly what they're doing. That's the problem. They just don't want us to know. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob Chapin. We're talking about really what's going on in the financial markets, what's going on. And Bob, in his latest newsletter, points out that IBM is, of course, going to massively expand its holdings and going to hire a lot of people in India, but not here in the United States. cutting back in America, expanding over in India. Motorola is doing the same thing, but not quite to that extent. And Bob, it looks like they're going to continue sending our jobs overseas, our factories overseas, and now, of course, with the new immigration legislation, they're going to open the floodgates and allow all those people from India and from other countries who are trained as computer experts, computer programmers, or, you know, they're going to bring people in to take the good jobs here as well.
Well, they'll do it via lower wages, and that's the attraction to the corporate employer. But IBM is spent $2 billion in India already and has about 40,000 on the staff, and they're going to add another 10,000. They spend another $6 billion over the next 2 or 3 years. I think it's 2 years. It's in that article you've got there. But it is just incomprehensible to me that our Congress would stand by and continue to allow things like that to happen, because they know that those jobs are leaving America. They know the money's leaving America. And I had a communique today, which was by the president of IBM, Passarella or whatever his name is, and he said, we are going to have a backlash against us multinational, transnational corporations, because we could even have a legislation which would end what we're doing. And what we should do is move all of our assets out of the United States so that we won't be subject to their jurisdiction, so to speak. And what this gentleman forgets is that the biggest market in the world at any given time is the United States. And if they put tariffs on things that IBM does and everybody else does, they're going to have to pay to sell their goods in the United States. So all of the benefit that they will have accrued from hiring the slave labor at one-third the cost or less than what it is in the United States, that'll all be taxed in the form of imposts and duties. And so they're not going to gain anything, and they're not going to tell you that. But they're deathly afraid of that. And you got to remember the great...
Hold that thought right there, Bob. We bring our other stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob is simply talking about what IBM... He's mentioned that the president of IBM had sent out a directive saying there's going to be a backlash against us because we're moving so many of our jobs, so many of our factories overseas, and IBM's already invested a couple of $1 billion over in India, and they're going to invest another $6 billion and increasingly transfer their jobs and their factories and manufacturing facilities out of the United States. Now, you remember when they told us, we started the World Trade Organization, we're going to lose a few jobs, but then we're going to keep the high-paying jobs here in America. You know, we'll get rid of the low-paying manufacturing jobs, and we're going to have all these high-paying jobs here. You remember that, how they kept telling us that? And of course, all the time they were planning on bringing in large numbers of people to take those good-paying jobs here. Only they're not going to pay so well. It is all part of a carefully orchestrated long-range plan to grind down the living standards of Americans. And in fact, it was just today I put in an order for some airline tickets. And who do you think I talked to? Some guy named Raj over there in Bombay. He was very nice, and we got the tickets. But you have to understand that they're transferring every job they can, whether it be scheduling airline tickets, whether it be answering questions as far as your Hewlett-Packard computers or Hewlett-Packard printers. All of this is being transferred out of the United States. And what sort of jobs are we going to have here? We're going to have ever lower paying jobs. The plan is gradually to grind out our living standards. Wouldn't you agree, Bob?
Absolutely, and destroy the American economy and the American way of life, so that we will be in a position where we will have to accept their world government.
That's exactly what they're doing. Well, tell me anything more you wanted to cut for as far as the IBM is concerned, because obviously the IBM realizes there is going to be a backlash. All of these companies realize there's going to be a backlash, and they're moving to protect themselves so that nothing can be done to stop them from moving their factories out of this country and thus impoverishing the middle class, the working class here in America.
Well, tariffs and imposts will do that. That will stop them dead in their tracks, because they're not going to get any advantage by hiring labor and coming up with a product that costs $100 to produce that would cost $150 in the United States, because that widget that they're making is going to be taxed $50. And so the game is up for them. They pushed too hard. It didn't really work. But I think the main intention was to destroy the American economy.
And I think there are people who want to destroy our economy. They want to redistribute our wealth to other countries. It's hard to believe that, but that is the major thrust of the political leaders of both political parties.
Right. When you see Congress do nothing, it gets very frustrating. So I've been telling the subscribers, with the exception of a handful of people, that I believe that they should vote every incumbent out of office. And that way, no matter who you put in, they can't be as bad as what we've got.
I noticed that you said about 55% of people said they were not going to vote for their congressman. I imagine there must be an awful lot of congressmen in Washington, D.C. who are very concerned about those figures.
Well, I'll tell you something. I think that it's going to be astounding to the American public when they see incumbents losing. And I do think the Democrats will take the House and maybe even the Senate. And I certainly am not a Democrat. Quite frankly, right now I'm nothing. But the point is that just to take the power of Congress and change it and take it away from the corporatist fascist government that's in Washington is enough for a start.
Well, I think what most people don't understand is that George Bush has been pushing through legislation that Democrats couldn't get through on their own. Whether it would be Ted Kennedy's No Child Left Behind educational program, Ted Kennedy's drug supplement Medicare bill, or now the immigration bill, this is all Democrat legislation for the full support of the Democrats. They call it bipartisan. It really means, of course, that all the Democrats want it, other than one or two, and none of the Republicans want it. And who's pushing it? Why, the Republican president of the United States is pushing the Democrat program, but it always goes to show that I think George Wallace said it better. Of course, it ended up getting him shot, but there's not a dime's worth of difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. And what happened? Why, an assassin came and shot him. And where was the Secret Service to protect him? I mean, they're not going to let them shoot other presidents. Go ahead.
Well, they arranged for a coup with one of them. But,
right.
But other than that, there's two kinds of socialism in Washington. International socialism, which has best been personified in years past by the Democrats and those to the left of Democrats. And then we had the hijacking of the Republican Party by national socialists, corporatists. And that's Nazism. But they're both forms of socialism. And as we've seen, you say to yourself, well, why is Republican Congress and Republican administration outpaced the Democrats and done things and passed things that the Democrats couldn't? Because they're just a group of socialists, but nobody knows they're socialists because the media won't tell the people the truth. And that's why we have programs like yours, Dr. Stan, so people can find out really what's going on in Washington and the true labels for these people.
Well, all we can do is keep trying to get the people to think about what's going on. And why is it the Republicans have had more spending and bigger deficit than the Democrats ever did if the Republicans stand for a balanced budget and limited spending? Look and see what's happening, and it's not certainly all the Iraqi war. Well, Bob, let's talk a little bit about what's happening as far as the stock market, because it appears that the stock market is falling. It was down, I don't know what, 60 or 80 points, 60 or 70 points here in the United States today. But the markets are falling all throughout the world. Why is that happening?
Well, there's a number of reasons. First of all, emerging stock markets were overpriced. The stock markets in Europe had hit new highs. The stock market in the United States had visited its old high. I don't believe any of these markets were in a bull market. I think they were in the latter stages of a bear market rally that's been going on for 3 years, which has been promulgated and fueled by excess liquidity. Now, one of the factors for that liquidity is the Japanese government, the Bank of Japan. For 7 years, they've had interest rates effectively at zero. And that's because their economy was in a depression and had been in a depression since 1990. And in order to keep it from collapsing, they had zero interest rates and just absolutely flooded their system with money.
But not only their system, but that money was let out all over the world in the carry trade.
Well, that's what I'm getting to. And so the carry trade was used, and that means that people would borrow yen, let's say 0.5% or 1%, and then they would take that money and buy dollars, and then they would buy U.S. treasuries or buy into the stock market or buy commodities, gold, silver, but mostly, because of the higher returns, a lot of that money was in the emerging market bonds and stocks. And so consequently, the Japanese have said about 6 weeks ago that they're going to raise interest rates to 2.5%, and they are going to withdraw reams of capital, which they're in the process of doing, from their banking system. And that means all of this cheap money, trillions of dollars worth, has got to be terminated, because if the interest rates in Japan go up, that means the value of the yen goes up. And they bought the yen less expensively. So when they come back to buy yen back to pay off their loans, they're going to have to pay more money. So they better hightail it out of the carry trades. And so in the process of doing so, investors, and these are mostly banks and professionals, they started selling their most risky assets. And so that's why the markets in the Middle East, Central and South America, and so on and so forth, came down first. That was followed by the European, and then now the U.S. market. And so that's why the markets, one of the reasons why the markets have been coming down. I think the other reason is the recognition, finally, of professionals that, you know, I really don't think that the U.S. government has been telling us the truth about producer price inflation and consumer price inflation. They think they're finally catching on to the fact that inflation for the last 4 years has been over 10% each year. And that's another reason the markets are coming down, and particularly the U.S. market.
And, of course, the markets really all throughout the world are falling. And then, of course, we've seen the rather dramatic sell-off of gold and silver. And these markets have fallen. Silver, part of silver is down from, well, it was pushing $15, $14.50, somewhere there. And now it's down to just about $11. That's a big drop, isn't it?
It's the second largest drop in 25 years. And the gold and silver markets dropped on the largest short positions that they've ever had. Now, what does that mean? You short something when you bet it's going to go down. And I'll finish that as soon as the music's over.
All right, fine. Well, first, basically, what is happening is Goldman Sachs and Morgan, a couple of the other big banks have been actually shorting silver and shorting gold. Why do they do that? Why, they want the price to come down. The last thing they want is for the people to realize, of course, we are in a fiat money system. We're dealing with money that has no intrinsic value. We've been doing that for years, and most of the people who are invested in dollar-related increments are simply going to lose everything that they have as the dollar falls and falls and falls in value. They do not want people in gold and silver. They've done everything to discourage their purchase. And I think this is sort of the last hurrah to get people out of the gold and silver market. Well, Bob, pick up the story from there.
Well, the shorting had been going on in the gold and silver markets, and normally when the market goes against people, what happens is that the shorts begin to cover. They buy back that which they have sold that they don't own. And, you know, that seems strange to people, but that's part of the things that go on in the market. You bet a stock or gold or silver or something is going to go down. And usually when you have all of these things happening together and you have these big shorts, it's usually short covering, they call it a trap. And it should have been that gold and silver should have gone higher. Now, there was no or very, very little physical selling of gold. And one of the reasons in this drop in the market, and silver as well. And you could tell that by the lack of fall in the open contracts on the commodities exchanges. And so where did the selling come from? The only place it could have come from are from derivatives. And about 80% of the derivative market is run by the U.S. government. And what they were doing is they were buying puts. A put is when you bet that something's going to go down, just like shorting. And the person who sells them the puts has to go in and short the stock in order to cover themselves, or short gold or short silver. And I believe that that's how they were doing what they were doing, although I think the writers of the puts were not covering them. And that's why it didn't show up in a big manner in increasing the short positions. And one of the things that is very unique about that market of derivatives is that there is absolutely no reporting and nobody knows what's going on in that market. And that's why Alan Greenspan and now the new chairman of the Federal Reserve, Mr. Bernanke, they don't want to change anything in derivatives or hedge funds because they're deeply involved with them.
And many people have called on Alan Greenspan. He was the chairman, and they're even calling now. You've got to you've got to regulate the derivative market. You've got to regulate hedge funds. You've got to regulate the carry trade. And they kept saying, oh, no, we don't want to regulate them at all. Well, basically, I think it was Warren Buffett who said, derivatives are financial weapons of mass destruction, currently latent but potentially lethal. And if these things ever begin to unfold and unwind, it can bring down the whole financial structure, not only the United States but the entire world. Why would they leave themselves open to that happening? Unless maybe that's the plan. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's the plan. And I think what's going to happen once the derivative market breaks, that J.P. Morgan and Citicorp both will go bankrupt. And the government will come in and keep them in business. Because all they are is extensions of the United States government. And there'll be others involved, like Goldman Sachs and Lehman Brothers and Deutsche Bank and then the major Japanese banks are all involved in this with the Federal Reserve. And you can see it by the way they trade. You know, I was a stockbroker for 28 years.
Hold that thought there for just a moment while we bring our stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were talking about the danger of the derivative market simply, imploding and dragging down the entire economy with it. In fact, the European central banks are concerned, and they've likened the possible collapse of the carry trade and the hedge funds and the derivatives to a worldwide avian pandemic. And of course, if there was a worldwide avian pandemic, it would simply disrupt the economy of the entire world. Nobody could go out, everybody would be quarantined, millions would be dying. and they likened what they see as coming down the line economically to a worldwide avian pandemic. And Bob has actually read that article in the Financial Times that I've quoted before. And obviously there are people, you know, very, very sophisticated people who are very worried about what's going on. Bob, you pick up the story.
Well, as I was saying in finishing that off, I was a trader for 25 of the 28 years I was a broker. And so I know these markets, and I know what they're doing. I can see it. As far as the bird flu is concerned and its effect on the world, I think it's a big scam.
Well, I think it is, too, but they were likening the unfolding of the unwinding of the derivatives to catastrophic effect.
Yeah, and effect would be that way, yes. You know, people just don't realize that it's just trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars in derivatives. I mean, we're talking about $375 trillion. I mean, that is an amount that people can't even imagine. And this is like three-card Monte. It's like a pyramid scheme. The whole thing is a giant scam. And so it will collapse. I don't know when, but it will.
And what it does, of course, everybody who's invested in dollar-related increments is going to get wiped out in what I refer to as the coming financial tsunami.
Well, I agree with that, and I think the way it's going to happen is that we'll first get hyperinflation, and then we'll get a collapse. And I don't know when that'll happen, but we're fast coming upon it.
Well, what do you think is going to happen in the market? Do you think it's going to continue dropping, or do you think it's going to stabilize here before long? Or do you think it's going to stabilize and then drop some more, or do you think it's going to stabilize and go back up, or does anybody know?
Well, first of all, the people in Washington know. And those who are around them and those who control them. I think the market's going to 9,500. I think that that's what they decided to do. And where it goes from there will remain to be seen. But that's where I see it going. I see interest rates on the U.S. 10-year note going to 6%, which means mortgage rates would go over to 7 to 7.5%. And I expect continued pressure in the bond market because people who are foreigners who are supplying us with $3 billion a day so we don't go bankrupt will want higher and higher yields to offset the inflation that they know is there that the government isn't telling the world about. And so that's the form things are going to take here over the short term. At the same time, the bond and stock markets will go down, and, of course, the real estate market will go down. And if you were to cut off, say, two-thirds to three-quarters of the money that's been coming out of equity loans from property or in cash-outs, we're talking $700 billion a year, the GDP would drop 1.5 to 2%. So if GDP right now is 4, it would go to 2 or 2.5%. Well, I don't believe the 4% figures because I think they're bogus. I think it's more like 3%. And anything under 2% is a recession. So if you deduct 1.5% from 3, you get 1.5, or maybe even 1. And so that's where we're headed. That's where the economy's going. And it's interesting that it's going there, in spite of the fact that this tremendous amount of money and credit is being pumped into the world economy. And as an old friend of mine, Ed Hart, used to say, he was an announcer many major radio and television stations over the years. He's since deceased. It's pushing on a string. And you reach a point where you can't, no matter how much money and credit you put in the system, it doesn't work anymore.
And on one hand, they're raising the interest rates to slow down the economy. On the other hand, they're flooding it with money and credit. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, one neutralizes the other, and it makes sense to them, that's for sure.
Oh, I'm sure that they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know. And then when we get back, I want to talk a little bit about Your view of the commodity market. We're talking about copper, nickel. We're talking about all of the commodities, and you think they're going to go up and go up dramatically, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment with Bob here, Bob Chapman. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. And, of course, ordinarily when you see the stock market dropping, and dropping as dramatically as it is, and why we've seen gold and silver and many of the commodities have dropped as well. But Bob believes, and I tend to agree with him, that this is going to reverse. Maybe the market is going to continue to go down, but there's going to be reversal of the fortunes of the major commodities because they're in short supply, and the economy is still going to continue growing in communist China and in India that has, between the two of them, almost half of the population of the world. So tell us your views on gold, silver, and the commodities.
Well, in the commodities, there is a law of diminishing returns. And that will happen once the U.S. economy slows. Now, it's beginning the second half of this year, and it won't go down dramatically. It will then, during the following year, 2007, it will go down even more. And I would think, at least by the end of 2007, that commodity markets probably will have reached their peak, but it's only a guess, because the average commodity bull market lasts 18 years, and we're only 7 years into this one, so we're not even halfway there to hit the average. But then again, we may not hit the average, because there's nothing sacred about historical records. They just happen to be there. And so if the economy slows down, places like India and China and Asia and other countries that manufacture things that ship into Western Europe and the United States, will be beset with lower buying, and that means lower production, that means less use of commodities. But I believe that there's an excellent chance that all the base economies will double from here. And I don't think many people would agree with me on that, but they didn't agree with me at when copper was 62 cents a share, 62 cents a pound, and I said it was going back to 120. And of course, it's done an awful lot more than that since. It's gone to $4. Recently, trading about 350. And I see the rest of the base metals, such as lead, zinc, and aluminum and copper, doing the same thing, and nickel as well. Nickel hasn't moved in a long time. Maybe the slowest mover will be aluminum. And gold and silver, just to catch up.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've been talking with Bob Chapman, the International Forecaster. And before we go on, Bob, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with the International Forecaster and perhaps subscribe to this, because I find it fascinating. Every Saturday, I look forward to getting my International Forecaster, somewhere between 30 and 50 pages. It's crammed full of all sorts of information, not simply on finances, but literally everything going on for the previous week. So how can people get in touch with you?
They can call toll-free 800-375-4188. That's toll-free 800-375-4188, and we will either send them by email, we publish weekly by email, or by hard copy, and we publish by hard copy twice a month, one or the other of those copies. And you can get a glimpse of it. If you want to go to our site and take a look, that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International Forecaster, FORECASTER.com.
All right, fine. And now if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment for Bob, why give us a call. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, we've seen gold drop from over 700. It was almost 700 anyway. And, of course, it's down to a little over 600 today. What was it, 602 or 604, somewhere in there, during the course of the day. Do you think they're going to get it down into the 500s?
No, I don't, but it's already been a very large drop, and the fundamentals haven't changed one single bit, and so I don't see it going down any further. If so, maybe a minuscule amount, maybe to 580, that's a possibility. The support levels are 457, and then 512 to 520. And the worst case, I think, is 512 to 520, but only time will tell. And I think people who are buying gold and silver should only be buying gold and silver because they want to be a long-term investor.
In other words, you not shouldn't try to play this market, get in and get out, just get in and sit there. And if it goes down, you sit tight.
And if you go down, you buy some more.
Okay.
So well, let's say you buy a stock at 20, and it drops to 14, and there's no substantial change in the market, then you go in and buy an equal dollar amount at that price, and then you'll average your cost down.
Well, of course, we've seen a dramatic fall certainly in gold stocks and other precious metal stocks here in the last couple of weeks, haven't we?
Yeah, the large gold stocks, as well as the small ones, the exploration companies, they're off about 30%, and that's normal for this kind of a correction. I've been in this since 1960, so I've seen plenty of corrections, so I don't get excited. I just tell people who are long to buy some more, and it's a wonderful opportunity for people who miss the market, because they can now buy silver and gold, numismatics, silver bags, gold and silver shares at a substantial reduction to the price that they had been before.
Well, you know, I would have thought that they would, with all the people who have been buying silver, I would have thought they would have run out of bags of silver coins, 90% silver coins, a long time ago.
Well, that's a good thought, and I think that 95% or more of the 64s and before that, I think they're gone. And I believe that dimes, quarters, and halves in the 90% silver bags, I think they're semi-numismatic already.
All right. Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens as far as those markets are concerned. Right now, they're in the downswing, but Bob thinks they're going to come back again, and probably with a vengeance. Now, would you want to hazard any sort of a guess as to how soon we're going to see them rising again, or would you just have to wait and see what happens?
Yeah, I think we have to wait for the bottom to be set. I'll know more this week watching the short positions. We had some nice short covering on Friday. Over 8,000 contracts, and closer to 9, actually. If that persists for another week or so, then I believe that we have hit the bottom. And when the shorts cover, what they must do is they must go in and buy the gold back that they sold at higher prices. And in some instances, some of these shorts are short at, you know, $450 an ounce. And so what they've been doing is shorting more to average their shorts to get their average price down. And so I think you're going to see a lot of short covering in this area. I saw it on Friday. I saw it again today. And not big, but it's starting.
All right. Basically, the old adage is, he who sells what isn't his and has to give it back or go to prison. And so these people are selling things they don't have, betting the price is going to go down. The price has got to go down. If this is the bottom, why, the people will cover their shorts. If it's not the bottom, then, of course, they will hold their position until it gets down there. And you are presupposing that this whole thing is really rigged by the big banks who are holding it. Isn't it Goldman Sachs and some of the others that are holding massive amounts of short positions in gold?
Yes, they are.
And who else besides Goldman Sachs?
And they're working on behalf of the United States government.
Well, isn't it interesting that they took somebody from Goldman Sachs and just made him Secretary of the Treasury? And that these people from Goldman Sachs, as you commented in your latest newsletter, are operating in key positions in banks all throughout the world?
Well, that's correct. And the reason they brought Bolton in is he's ex-Goldman Sachs to run the UN. He's just as arrogant as the rest of them. And they brought in
Paulson
because they want him to handle the working group on financial markets and try to keep the derivatives in the stock market and the bond markets from collapsing. That's why they're there.
And of course, we find them in a number of other countries' key banking positions, all recently appointed there from Goldman Sachs, which of course has been shorting gold. Why would you short gold when it's going up? Because you know the price is going to come down. How do you know the price is going to come down? Because it's going to be manipulated down. So, I mean, it's really a pretty good deal from their point of view. If you know what the market's going to do when you're working in conjunction with the people who can create money out of nothing, as the Federal Reserve and our banking system does, and it's sort of like a money machine, isn't it?
It sure is. They have a license to steal.
And, of course, those who manipulate the market, those who can create money out of nothing, as the banking system does, are in a, certainly a wonderful, wonderful position for lining their own pockets and eventually impoverishing the American people. And that is part of the master plan as laid out in the Earth Chart. If you haven't read it, you need to get a copy. If you can't get a copy off on the Internet, we'll be glad to send you one. You must read point 10A. Understand that they know exactly what they're doing when they talk about the redistribution of wealth within nations and between nations, and they're talking about you, ladies and gentlemen. And they know exactly what they're going to do. They just don't want you to know. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for Bob, because he has a phenomenal amount of knowledge and understanding of the things that certainly are going on behind the scenes. And I think one of the hardest things for people to understand is how the interest rates work and how the bond rates work and how, you know, why it is that when the interest rates go up, the price of bonds go down. When the price of bonds goes up, the interest rates go down. And do you want to cover any of those things?
Well, that's exactly the way it works.
And, of course, the thing is that foreign countries are not going to continue lending the United States money. If the value of the dollar is going to go down, the only way they're going to continue lending us money is if they know that they're going to be able to get higher interest rates. Would that be a fair statement?
That's true. They have a double whammy there. Number one, you get a devaluing dollar. At the same time, you have inflation. I mean, if the dollar is going down, say, at the rate of over the next several years of 10%, and you have inflation going up 10%, you're losing 20% a year.
And, of course, this is the big thing, that the foreign governments, the foreign central banks, will not indefinitely continue to finance our excesses. Certainly Paul Volcker has talked about that in that wonderful talk he gave, I believe it was in April of last year, as I remember it. It was published in the Washington Post, and he said, sooner or later, the foreign banks are going to stop lending to us. Now, you have to understand, Paul Volcker is one of the major architects of everything going on today. And he was really telling the people on the inside in that Washington Post article exactly what lies ahead. In fact, we quote from that extensively in our Financial Tsunami syllabus. People who have not gotten hold of a copy of that or heard our talk on that. Paul Volcker knows what's going on, don't you think, Bob?
Oh, absolutely he does. And he's talked along that line for the last few years, from here to there. Not on a national or international basis. He gets just quoted here and there. He keeps his mouth shut, but every once in a while he pops off and says something. And he's probably the best Federal Reserve chairman that we've had. Greenspan was a disaster. It's just that nobody knows it yet because we haven't had the problems that are going to come from what Greenspan was told to do and did do.
And, of course, everything he was told to do was to wreck our economic system. The purpose of the Federal Reserve System is to give us a stable currency. And it's done just the opposite from that. And the average American doesn't understand that. But all of these massive debts with nothing behind it eventually is going to wreck the system, don't you think?
Absolutely. It can't do anything but, especially when you're borrowing $3 billion a day. I mean, that's an incredible amount of money to borrow every day.
And the trouble is, when you borrow the money, you have to pay it back. And where's the money going to come from to pay it back is the question. And, of course, what's happening
they just expect to print more money.
Well, of course, one of the interesting things is foreign governments and certainly foreigners, foreign corporations are coming in and buying up America. Today, they own $3 trillion more of American corporations and American banks and all these other things. They own $3 trillion more of us than we owe of them. And the entire wealth of the American stock market, all of our corporations, is only about $18 to $19 trillion. So if things continue going at the rate they are, you know, how soon before they own everything in America?
Well, they just in Treasury paper alone, they own 2.1 something trillion. We'll say 2.2, and then they get agency securities, which is Fannie and Freddie. Then they have corporate securities, and then they also have stocks. So, you know, we're talking something in the realm of perhaps $5 trillion, and they start liquidating. I mean, it's just goodbye.
And, you know, I've read a book by Craig Unger was going into the Arabs. The Arabs own almost $1 trillion worth of assets here in the United States. And we're talking about the Saudi Arabians. I think it was $800 billion. That's almost $1 trillion. What would happen if they pulled their money out of the United States? Literally overnight.
Well, I tell you, one of the arguments that I had in my last issue is that essentially the proposal that's been made by the administration to Iran is a total sellout. I mean, it's nothing like I would have ever imagined. And Iran would be crazy not to accept it. But the fallout from that is Iran, even if they don't have nuclear weapons as a result of that, Iran will again be a large recognizable power in the Middle East, and there are India, China, and others in Asia who are purchasing a lot of oil in the Middle East, and they're going to want to participate in the security of the Middle East. Now, the U.S. and the British have had a monopoly since the 1930s. We'll finance originally the production of oil, and you guys pump it, and we'll protect you, and then you take that money and you invest it with us. That's the game that was being played. The game's going to change. Part of the money will still go there, but part of it will go to investments in other countries. And those same countries will want to participate in the security of the area. And if they do that, that means that the power of Imperial America will diminish in the Middle East. The ramifications of the failure in Iran and Afghanistan will live with America for the next 200 years. It is the most incompetent, idiotic thing that's ever happened in the United States.
And of course, the Taliban is reforming in Afghanistan, and of course, we face the potential of a defeat and continuing defeat there. Of course, they're trying to shift the responsibility to NATO. That's, of course, the World Army. But America still bears the responsibility for attacking a nation that we financed all during the years. The Taliban, we financed the Taliban despite they were hosting the wicked Osama bin Laden, who had actually supposedly been involved with the bombing in Aden in 1992 and the World Trade Center bombing in 93 and the Black Hawk Down incident in 94 and Riyadh and Khobar Towers in 95 and 96 and the bombing of our embassies in 1998 and the coal bombing in 2000. And Osama bin Laden was living in Afghanistan, and the United States government was funding the Taliban. And if you doubt that, read President Bush's September 20th, 2001 speech. You can get it off his website. We were funding the Taliban that was hosting Osama bin Laden, that was committing all these terrible atrocities, and suddenly after 9/11 we had an excuse to attack Afghanistan, and now we've got nothing but chaos there. Well, you know, Bob, I agree with you. I'm very, very concerned about what's going on in the Middle East, and even more concerned because Iran and Russia and Venezuela are all talking about selling their oil in currencies other than the dollar. What impact will that have?
Well, it'll remove the United States as the leading and only factor in the petrodollar market, and it'll bring about the end of the U.S. currency as a world reserve currency, which is going to be devastating for the average American. They just don't get it. They don't understand.
And that's really talking to within the next 6 months to a year, aren't we?
I think, yes, it's going to happen that quickly.
And even maybe more quickly. We're going to be back in just a moment to wrap up the evening's program here with Bob Chapman. Well, Bob, the hour flies by. You got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, thank you very much. I think that we should be looking down the road at what we think is going to happen. I think we've covered a number of the things tonight, but let's talk about you out there. What you have to do is make sure you get rid of your credit card debt and your revolving debt, try to pay off your vehicles, because there's a good possibility that here over the next year and 2 years, that one of you breadwinners is going to be out of work, and you want to try to be able to keep your house. And I think that is important for most average people. Secondly, I think that the things that you'd like to do, I think you should put off and maybe invest some of that in gold and silver related assets. And I think that you should go to the elections this coming year in November and vote for somebody new that hasn't been in office and hope that they don't do as terrible a job as their predecessors. And I think those are things that you can really participate in. And try to get these kinds of ideas over to other people. Haven't listened to Dr. Stan's programs. And you'd be surprised. They may not listen to you, but they'll certainly listen to a third party. And so I think those are some of the important things that should be done by your listeners.
And, of course, I think that everybody's got to begin to get themselves prepared for some very difficult financial times. You're going to be told by the pundits here on MSNBC, everything's fine, a little turned down, but it's going to come back again. You know, all the figures for employment, for manufacturing, everything is looking good, but is that really true, Bob? Are these government figures really accurate?
Well, that's hard to say on the manufacturing figures. I know that the productivity figures aren't true. They're just absolute lies. Manufacturing, I would suspect that they're not. But I don't have any backdrop on that. I don't know whether they're using hedonics, and I just really can't comment on it.
Hedonics, of course, is a fancy method of coming up with whatever sort of figures you want. Well, Bob, we're out of time, but thanks so very much, and we'll look forward to having you back with us again a little later this month as we try to get people prepared for the difficult financial times that lie ahead. Thanks so very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan, and good night.
Good night, and God bless you. Bye. Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind all of our radio listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. If you have not yet seen my talk, or it's on either DVD or on VHS, and it comes with a syllabus called The Financial Tsunami. And if you specifically ask for the latest ZIP figures, well, I will send you those latest figures from the Federal Reserve that point out that in a three-month time, the credit and debt of the American population rose $1 trillion. There's never been anything like that in all recorded history. $1 trillion increased debt in a matter of 3 months. I mean, this is accelerating. It just at a tremendous rate. And of course, it's got to stop, either that or the dollar will be destroyed. And remember, the solvency of a nation is dependent upon the solvency of the currency. And believe me, I believe that they're doing everything they can. Instead of trying to stabilize our situation, to collapse our economy, and to impoverish our people. If you need more information on that, you need to give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. The Financial Tsunami Syllabus actually includes a copy of the Earth Charter, which you must get, which you must read, especially point 10A, which talks about how we will have equitable redistribution of wealth within nations and between nations. They're talking about equalizing income in our society, or equalizing the poverty, but then between nations, that means sending our wealth to other nations. That's the plan, but we can't tell the American people that. That's the Earth Charter. It's in this Financial Tsunami. It's also available in our Sustainable Development Syllabus, or you can pull it down off the Internet, but get it and read it and start showing it to people. And understand that this document is, according to the authors, the new Ten Commandments for the world. They placed it in the Ark of Hope, which is a satanic or Luciferian counterpart of the Ark of the Covenant. And understand, behind this whole move of the powerful spiritual forces that we talk about in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get that book, and you need to read it through several times. You need to certainly get the DVD or the VHS view of that. You need to understand what's going on, and you need to help us get the information out. Of course, if you have not yet read my pamphlets on the occult hierarchy, there are three of them. They're made up of my newsletters. It will give you insight into the other dimension. Ladies and gentlemen, there is another dimension. There are people who tap into the other dimension, and that other dimension is really directing many of the people who lead our nation today. So certainly we hope many of you out there will give serious consideration to going to our website, www.radioliberty.com. If you'd like to learn more about any of the things we've talked about, our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy, the financial tsunami, either the syllabus or the DVD or the video, and of course my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, either the DVD or the video, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, because if America doesn't turn back to God, God will never again protect this nation, and especially in the difficult times we're moving into. Pray certainly for our leaders and our ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan Backer at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us Michael Woolsey. And Michael is with a group that is certainly looking to the background of what really happened at that watershed event on the 11th of September, 2001. Now, remember, probably the day before the attack on the World Trade Center, nobody in America would possibly have thought of the possibility of going to war with Afghanistan or with Iraq, or the possibility we're going to war with Iran, but nobody would have wanted to get into a war in the Middle East. The day after that, why, of course, everybody wanted to strike back at those wicked people who had actually brought down the World Trade Center and Building Number 7 and crashed into the Pentagon and the other plane that had crashed in Pennsylvania. And then we have the heroic story of the passengers who risked their lives, who gave their lives trying to take back control of that plane so it wouldn't be crashed into the White House or the Capitol building. But the question is what we've been told about what happened on the morning of September 11th really true? Isn't it a coincidence that on that very morning that they had at least three, perhaps four, military exercises, at least one of them involving hijacking a plane and crashing it into the Pentagon? A military exercise which so confused many of the air traffic controllers that they didn't know whether, when the attack came, that it was a real attack or it was a military exercise. And Osama bin Laden must have really been pretty smart to arrange that, or was that just fortuitous? And then, well, there were so many things that happened that morning that nine of the hijackers were actually stopped before they got onto the plane and then allowed to get onto the plane. But the president knew that they were planning that. In fact, one of the hijackers had defected to the United States in April of 2006 and announced he was part of a hijacking team trained in Pakistan, come to the United States to hijack our planes, and the FBI sent him out of the country and never really questioned him, even to find out where he'd been trained in Pakistan, and certainly didn't try to find the rest of his hijacking team. And you have to ask yourself, why? Was he the 20th hijacker? Nobody wants to ask that question. Well, Michael Woolsey is with us, and Michael, thank you so very much. And tell us what your take is on what has gone on, what really happened on the morning of September 11th, and what do we know that we can actually be certain of?
Well, Dr. Stan, thanks for having me on, first of all, tonight. It's a pleasure to be on your show. And, you know, there's just so much surrounding the attacks of September 11th that we could really talk about it all night long. But, you know, in your introduction, you had mentioned, you know, how none of this would have been possible, the attacks in Afghanistan, the attacks in Iraq, legislation that was introduced after September 11th, such as the Patriot Act and other very intrusive legislation which deteriorate our rights, our God-given rights, which are enshrined in the Bill of Rights. None of this would have been possible were it not for a new Pearl Harbor. That's their own words, coming straight out of the Project for the New American Century's document, Rebuilding America's Defenses. And I would urge your listeners, if they're not familiar with who the Project for New American Century is, that they go onto the Internet and go to their website and read some of their writings. Pull down this document, Rebuilding America's Defenses, where...
Hold up right there, please, Michael. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest is Michael Woolsey. He's talking about something called the Project for the New American Century. And Michael, what is that website? How can people get to their website?
Okay, if folks want to check out who the Project for a New American Century is, they can go to their website at newamericancentury.org. And basically, this is a group that was formed during the Clinton administration in 1997, formed by people like William Kristol, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld. And basically, they were very unhappy with the way that they thought the country was going under the leadership of the Clinton administration. And they were unhappy with the defense cuts, etc. And they were also particularly fascinated with Iraq, and they wrote about Iraq quite a bit. In that they pretty much outwardly advocated regime change in Iraq, and this was some of their statement of principles. They had talked about this, but if you fast forward to 2000. They published a document titled Rebuilding America's Defenses, and they just railed against the Clinton administration, and they called for huge increases in defense spending and all this other stuff to create a global dominance by the United States. And they particularly mention Iraq, they mention Iran, and in 2000 when George W. Bush was put into office, he brought many of these same individuals into his administration. And the document Rebuilding America's Defenses, they admit that the goals that they lay out are going to take a long time, that they're going to be very expensive, and they openly state that they wouldn't be able to achieve these goals absent a catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. And this is their words, not mine. So this is something that we can really look at when we say, you know, look at what has happened since September 11th and, how September 11th has been used to justify all this really horrible stuff. And, you know, then you begin to say, well, you know, maybe some of this stuff is worth getting a closer look at. Maybe they did need a reason to go into Iraq. They needed a reason to get the American public behind what they their imperialistic agenda.
But, of course, we're talking about the death of 3,000 Americans, and the question is, who was really behind that? Was Osama bin Laden really behind that? We've been told he was, but is that really true? I mean, did something happen on September 11th that we thought we saw, but maybe we didn't really see what we saw? Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Michael Woolsey, and Michael has been talking about the Project for the New American Century, a little clique of people who got together in 1997 and laid out a statement of principles. They were men like Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and a man named John Bolton, who today is the American ambassador to the United Nations, and Paul Wolfowitz, who today is the president of the World Bank, and Liddy, who is, of course, under indictment, and of course, Elliot Abrams, and, of course, Gary Bauer, who is the man who's to manipulate the Protestants, and William Bennett, who's the man to manipulate the Catholics, and Erwin Kristol, and Norman Potteros, who are to manipulate the Jewish population. So they have people, propagandists in all of the various organizations. Here, Frank Gaffney, of course, is to manipulate the intellectuals. There are only 25 or 27 people. And yet these people are in key positions, and you'll see them quoted time and time again today. Their plan to create a new international order. America was to dominate the world. And isn't it amazing that when George Bush got into office, you know, so many of those original 27 people were placed into key positions in the Bush administration. So, Michael, pick the story up there, because, of course, what really happened on September 11th? Was this simply an act of foreign terrorists, or is there more to the story than the American people have been told or would dare to suspect?
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, on the surface, you know, when 9/11 happened, it was real easy for myself to just listen to what was coming out of the talking heads on the news, and to just basically go about my business. I mean, they were in charge. They're taking care of business. You know, we're going into Afghanistan. We're going to get these people. It was really easy just to go along with that. And it was 2 years after the attacks that I actually started to wake up and question what happened. And you know, still to this day, when I talk to people, I talk to a lot of people about September 11th, and you know, one of the main things that people will say to me is, you know, our government would never do something like that. You know, I see what you're saying. You know, I see, you know, that maybe they used this as an excuse to go into Iraq and Afghanistan, but I still can't put my hands around the fact that the government would actually murder its own citizens. And one of the things that I like to point people to is going back in history now to 1962 and the Northwoods document. And this is a recently declassified document where the Joint Chiefs of Staff from the Pentagon had drawn up plans to actually manufacture events to draw us into a war with Cuba. And when I came across that, I said, wow. You know, and when I show this to people, they pretty much have the same reaction, and it kind of opens their mind to take a little bit of a closer look into the actual events. And there are many, many anomalies, events, and unanswered questions that we have about, you know, the day of September 11th.
Well, before we go on to that, let's talk a little bit about the Northwood document.
Sure.
Could you explain who wrote the Northwood document and what happened to the Northwood document and what the Northwood document actually called for? This is a legitimate document. It's been brought forward by James Bovard in his writings, and, of course, we actually have his books where he writes about it, but we actually offer a copy of the Northwood document in our Iraq the Untold Story. So, what is the Northwood document? Who wrote the Northwood document? And why is it so vitally important to understand what happened on September 11th?
Well, I'm not exactly sure who authored it.
It was authored by the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Yeah, it was signed by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, L.L. Lemnitzer.
Right.
And basically, they wanted to get us into a war with Cuba. They wanted to get Castro out of power. And so they came up with this plan where they would trick the American public into supporting a war against Cuba. And they list a long list of, I mean, the title of the document, aside from, you know, the stuff that's at the top there, it says, Pretext to Justify a War with Cuba.
And they were actually going to, of course, we were sending astronauts up at that time. They were going to blow up an astronaut. In fact, they were going to blow up the rocket with John Glenn in it, and they were going to blame it on Fidel Castro. They were going to kill John Glenn. Or they were going to, of course, sink some of our boats and blame it on Fidel. Or they were going to feign shooting down a plane loaded with students and blame it on Fidel. Or they were going to have dress people up, Cubans, you know, or anti-Castro Cubans, but they were going to dress them up in uniforms of the Cuban army and have them storm into Guantanamo, thinking, of course, they were just all play-acting, and then they were going to kill them all.
And yeah, they, you know, they
Fidel,
put up...
Go ahead.
They put a long list of scenarios that they could do, that they could actually enact, you know, including, you know, like you said, dressing up, you know, friendly forces that were to be dressed up as hostiles and committing acts of sabotage.
But then they were going to kill all these people who were working for us. That was what's so so inhumane about it. They were going to kill these people who were patriotic to us and hated Castro. We were going to kill them and then claim that they were Fidel's men, and that way we could justify going to war.
Yeah.
So there was no concern about human life. It is a totally crass, it is totally evil, and to think that this was prepared by our Joint Chiefs of Staff to deceive the American people to get us into a war with Cuba in 1962 is almost beyond belief.
You bet. And when you lay that down in front of somebody, they can't deny it. They can't deny that it says in there, casualty lists in U.S. newspapers would cause a helpful wave of national indignation. And so, you know, they were clearly had in their mind how they could sway the American public into supporting this war. And so, you know, it's just absolutely an atrocity that elements within our government would even consider this kind of thing, and this Northwoods document proves beyond any shadow of a doubt that the government that we had, at least in 1962, was capable of this. And when Eisenhower left office, in his farewell address, he warned the American public. He warned us against the military-industrial complex, and, you know, unfortunately, his warning has gone unheeded.
And, of course, there is this force within our society that has no moral compunctions about killing Americans as long as it will advance their agenda. And that is the question, then, what really happened on September 11th? Was this really the act of something planned by Osama bin Laden? And if it was, why have we never captured Osama bin Laden? Why didn't we try to capture him in Afghanistan? Why didn't we pursue him into Pakistan? Or is this all simply to deceive the American people and make them think that Osama bin Laden was behind this? Where is Osama bin Laden? Well, he once time worked for the CIA. His family is very close to many people in the administration, and certainly we know that there are people within the Saudi government who've been funding Osama bin Laden and the whole al-Qaeda movement, and many of these people are very close to our own CIA. But let's talk about what really happened on that morning of September 11th. What happened that we should have some serious questions about and question the official government position?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the first things that I think that people should look at is, where was the military on September 11th? Where was our Air Force? And, you know, you have to consider the fact that out there on the East Coast, it's, you know, probably one of the more heavily populated areas of the country. And it's a vital infrastructure to our economy out there. And it's some of the most highly defended skies in the world. Our nation's capital is there, New York City, and yet, on September 11th, these planes started going wildly off course. They turned their transponders off, and for nearly 2 hours, they were flying around unmolested in the skies. And you have to ask yourself, where was the Air Force on that day?
They were all involved in military exercises, pretending that the terrorists had taken one of our planes hostages and was going to crash into the Pentagon, and that really did nothing but confuse the air traffic controllers. That's covered in a book by James Bovard called Pretext for War. Are you acquainted with that one, Michael?
I'm not, no.
Well, anyway, this goes into the background. And then, of course, Michael Rupert's crossing the Rubicon goes into all these military exercises. Isn't that a strange coincidence?
Yes.
We should be having military exercises that very morning that involved pretending to somebody, terrorists hijacking a plane and crashing it into the Pentagon or the CIA. And if that is really true, how could Condoleezza Rice have said the next day, who would have ever thought that the terrorists would hijack our planes and crash them into buildings?
Well, yeah, she lied to the American public. It was, the idea of crashing a plane into the World Trade Center had even been contemplated by Hollywood.
In fact, those who saw the motion picture about the who were they? They were part of the X-Files, the lone gunman. And 6 months before the real attack occurred, they had a feigned attack, and the lone gunmen were on this plane that was flying to Washington, D.C., and it was taken captive by some radicals. They controlled it by computer, and, of course, the plane is headed right towards the World Trade Center. And, of course, just at the last minute, the lone gunmen break into the computers and are able to take control of the plane. It soars over the top of the World Trade Center. And after 9/11, that motion picture just disappeared.
Sure, and you have to think, that these people that are running our government, like Condoleezza Rice, who was National Security Advisor at the time, that, it's just ridiculous to think that they hadn't contemplated such a situation. I mean, there was a situation over in Genoa when the leaders from around the world were getting together, and they actually had called for anti-aircraft batteries to be stationed around the facilities because they were afraid that somebody might try to fly an aircraft into them.
And so, basically, they knew something was going to happen. Have you looked into the August 6th presidential briefing, presidential daily briefing?
Yes, yeah, the one titled Bin Laden Determined to Strike in the U.S.
Right, and if they knew that Bin Laden was thinking of striking the U.S., why did the head of the FBI and the CIA said, we knew an attack was coming, we thought it was going to be overseas? Why did they tell the president one thing and, when they testified under oath, have an entirely different story? Or are they just trying to confuse the American people? We'll be back here in just a moment with Michael Woolsey. Well, Michael, pick up the story.
Well, going back to the military response, and You know, you can tell a lot about an activity by how the participants, if you will, act afterwards. And there's just a tremendous amount of what I would call guilty demeanor surrounding the entire events of September 11th. And on the day or shortly after September 11th, they made statements to the effect that no aircraft were scrambled to intercept these errant aircraft until after the Pentagon had been struck. And people start to look at this and they said, you know, well, where was the Air Force? And, you know, what happened here? You know, why was there no response? And so they eventually had to change their story for the first time. And they came out with this story and with some different timelines. And basically the people went over these timelines and they said, you know, this is a little bit better, but, you know, you still had time. You still could have intercepted Flight 175. You still could have intercepted Flight 77. And so when the 9/11 Commission report came out, they changed their story again. And so, you know, if you were a police officer and you had caught somebody doing some sort of a crime and they changed their stories 2-3 times, that's going to raise a big red flag to you. But yet, we're supposed to accept what the 9/11 Commission report said as the gospel truth about what happened on September 11th. Yet, they just completely failed to address so much that it's hard to take anything that they put out seriously.
Well, I certainly agree with you. And there were so many things about what happened that morning, that the fact that those, you know, the Twin Towers came down, and yet no other steel-reinforced building had ever collapsed like that. That was very, very strange, wasn't it?
Yeah, in the history of modern steel skyscraper construction, no steel-framed high-rise has ever collapsed due to fire. And yet, on September 11th, we are expected to believe that three buildings, not two, three buildings, the Twin Towers and Building 7, all came down largely as a result of the fires. And, you know, the engineers who designed the World Trade Center, they have came out and said, you know, look, these buildings were designed to take multiple impacts from jetliners. They were 707s at the time, but the 757s aren't a heck of a lot bigger. So, you know, the impact of the planes cannot be identified as the culprit of the collapse of those buildings, and so they say that it was largely due to fires. But yet, fire does not get nearly to the point of melting the steel, let alone, you know, weakening it. And you have to realize that the temperature of the fires is not indicative of the temperature of the steel. And when we're talking about these temperatures, we're talking about the temperature of the steel. Now, steel is a great conductor of heat. And anybody who has ever worked with a cutting torch or a welder on steel knows that that steel will take that heat away from where you're working. You've got to constantly keep the fire on it, and it will just diffuse that steel away. Now, there was massive amounts of steel in the World Trade Center. The core columns alone, there were 47 of them up through the center of each tower. They were massive box columns, 4-inch thick steel at the base, which tapered up to about a quarter inch thick at the very top where the loads were less. But then around the exterior of each tower were another 240 columns, which basically formed the spaces in between.
Hold that whole talk right there. Well, Michael was simply talking about the construction of the World Trade Center, and you know, 47 heavy beams in the center and the periphery, all made up of steel, reinforced steel, and this building was made to withstand fires, and there's never been any similar building ever come down in all recorded history. And this is not one building, but it's two buildings, and then the third building. Why did Building 7 come down? And say what you will, I don't even argue about the Twin Towers. I ask, why did Building 7 come down? And when I talk to people on this, they don't want to talk about and ask why Building 7 came down, because it cannot be explained. Certainly cannot be explained by the fires there. So pick up the story there, Michael.
Well, the idea that the Twin Towers and Building 7 were brought down by controlled demolition all stem, at least for my opinion, from the collapse of Building 7. Because when a lot of people have seen where they go in and they map out a building for a controlled demolition. They place explosives at strategic points, and they get the building to implode in on itself. And when you watch the collapse of Building 7, it was captured on three or four different cameras that day. Unmistakably, it looks just like a controlled demolition. When you look at it for the first time, you say, that's a controlled demolition. And then when you start to look at it closer, you see squibs coming out, which are indicative of a controlled demolition. You see the characteristic kink in the roof line of the building, which when a company contracts out to implode a building, they want to keep it into its own footprint. They want to minimize damage to surrounding structures and minimize the cleanup time. And so they detonate explosives in the inner walls just slightly before the outer walls, which enables gravity. They'll knock out the support structure on the interior, and then gravity will pull the exterior walls in on top of the interior of the building. And so when you see these videos of Building 7, first of all, it just reaches out and grabs you that, you know, that looks just like a controlled demolition. And the speed in which it came down, it was virtually a free fall speed. And yet we're to believe that fires caused this to happen. And, you know, if that were true, you know, why are these companies, and there's only a small handful of them in the world, who are expert enough to actually bring a building down like this? Why do we even need these companies? We could just go in these buildings and set a few small fires and they'll come down, you know? So the Building 7 is the one that really brought me to take a look at the Twin Towers. Because, you know, I thought, well, if they would implode Building 7, then, you know, maybe they did that to the towers. And then when you start to look at the towers and how quickly they came down at almost a free fall speed, and the amount of dust that was generated and the pulverization of that dust and all of the contents in the towers, these are all features of controlled demolition. They're not a feature of a gravity collapse, which is basically the government story that weight from above, you know, collapsed down, and, you know, this upper section of the building acted as a pile driver to basically destroy the bottom half of the building.
But of course, if you look at the films of the, you'll actually see the top of the building, one of the buildings, tilting to one side about 30 degrees. So
that's right.
It was falling off. It wasn't going to act like the pile driver.
That's right. And, you know, that violates, you know, so many laws of physics, and you don't have to be a physics expert or an engineering expert to know that when something is going to topple over, that it doesn't just smash everything under it. It'll keep toppling over. There's laws of physics that apply that would, you know, dictate that this upper section, like you said, it was the top of the South Tower, it literally started to tip, and before it could actually fall to the ground and topple over, it literally exploded. And so, you know, there's a lot of information out there. Professor Jones out at Brigham Young University has been doing quite a bit of extensive research into this topic, and he's got some video which shows, I believe it's the South Tower, and it shows some molten metal just gushing out of one of the corners of the towers, and it's like an orange to yellow hot metal is just pouring out. And Professor Jones hypothesizes that there was a substance called thermite that could have possibly been used in the destruction of the tower. So,
well, I think there are a lot of very, very capable people, but apparently a lot of pressure was put on his university. He I don't know what his situation is as far as his but I know that they put pressure on to try to silence him. They will put pressure on to try to silence anybody who questions the official party line. Because think of the implications. If, you know, they knew the attack was coming and they had placed explosives, at least in Building 7, maybe they put them in the Twin Towers as well. Maybe that explains why they went down as they did. We'll be back here in just a minute. But what about who's responsible then for the deaths? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we've got Bob from Tennessee. Hi, Bob. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
You know, this subject has been beat to death, and it's amazing to me, with all the information that's come out, that the American public has not demanded that the truth come out on this. You know, there's so many books out there, there's so many films, there's so many radio shows such as yourself that are bringing these facts out. You know, it's still just we're listening to the same old propaganda, and it's still being hidden. You know, when that first happened, my wife, I'll never forget today, I don't think anybody in America will. My wife called me and woke me up. I was working graveyard shift at the time, and I watched it as it unveiled before me on TV. And then I asked myself a couple of questions after it happened, and after they tried to explain how it happened. I've worked with metal all my life. That's what I do. I'm a pipe welder. You know, aluminum melts at around 850 degrees. Steel melts at 1400 to 1600 degrees. Diesel fuel burns at about 900 degrees. How did diesel fuel burning bring these tires down? There's no way. You know, and I thought, well, as it's investigated, they'll find out that there was explosives on these planes, or that explosives was put into these buildings by these terrorists. But no, you know, they still lead us, the American people, to believe that diesel fuel, and that's actually what airplane fuel is, brought these buildings down. And, you know, there's no way.
Well, Michael, how would you respond to what Bob said?
Well, Bob, first of all, I appreciate your frustration with, you know, the fact that here we are almost five years after the attacks, and we're still really just working our tails off trying to get this information out to the American public. And I lay the blame for that solely at the foot of the mainstream media here in America. Now, if the mainstream media were to jump on this issue, we wouldn't have to be doing what we're doing. None of us who are involved in, you know, trying to get the truth out about 9/11 would have to even be involved in this. And so, you know, first of all, your point is that, you know, the media is just so controlled that we have a hard time getting this information out. For example, you know, we just had our big conference out in Chicago, and, you know, we did manage to get a piece written about us in the New York Times, which is a first. I mean, we...
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We have Bob calling us from Tennessee. We actually have Michael Woolsey with us as a guest. And, Michael, before we go on, I want you to get out your website and your organization's telephone number so people would like to get the information your organization has, they can access it.
Sure. They can go to 911truth.org on the web, and they can get a lot of information there about our organization. We have a grassroots contact list there. As far as activism, there's a lot of information out there. If people would like to call me to get involved, they can give me a call at 970-373-4401. And I'll get back to them if they want to give me a call.
Telephone number up one more time.
Sure. It's 970-373-4401. And the website is 911truth.org.
All right, fine. I think it's so important that people understand that the implications of this are frightening, because if indeed we have not been told the truth, we've had two committee investigations. One was the Senate House Intelligence Committee investigation. The second one was the 911 Commission report. Both of those reports were thoroughly censored and altered by the Bush administration. And if the question is, if there's nothing to conceal, why are they concealing it? Are they trying to keep the wicked Osama bin Laden living, huddled in a cave somewhere in Pakistan from knowing what we knew ahead of time? Or are they trying to keep the American people from learning the truth? But the implications are rather frightening, because if we have not been told the truth, is it possible that the administration knew the attack was coming and didn't stop it? Or even more frightening, that there were actually explosives in Building 7. And if there were explosives in Building 7, were the explosives in the Twin Towers that actually dissolved the major structures of the Twin Towers there at the base? And certainly William Rodriguez, who was there, describes the explosion at the base of the building, at the basement, the sub-basement, before the planes hit the building. Is this possible that the whole thing is contrived? Bob, I'm going to give you one more thought before we let you go. And once again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Bob, do you have anything to say before we let you go?
Let me make two quick points. First of all, when they were investigating this, I'd like to saw the relatives of the people that died and they're more involved. Those people would have got down to the bottom of this. And they should have been allowed to have been involved in those hearings, and I promise you things would have come out differently if they had had a voice at the time of those investigations. Another thing that I noticed was, you think back to where our president was during that time at that school reading to those children. The Secret Service is charged with protecting our president. And at the time that first plane flew into those towers, their job would have been to have rushed him off to a safe area and got him away from that school. I mean, everybody, you know, it was in the paper that he was there. It was common knowledge. And we've got planes flying around that can bring down a tower, and they allow him to sit in a school, an unprotected area, for over an hour and a half.
Read about a goat even after he knows for 6 minutes after he knows that the Chris were under attack. All right, I agree with you totally. Anything else you wanted to say, Bob?
Well, one other thing is short trading that happened before the attack. And you've heard all about that, and I've heard you speak about it on your show. All the short trading that went on and all the millions of dollars that was made. Follow the money. I say follow the money.
But, of course, they know who was involved in that. They just don't want the American people to know.
Well, I believe God will touch the conscience of the people. And there's people out there that really know the truth. I don't know the truth, and you don't. We can have a pretty good idea that somebody knew or somebody dropped the ball. But, Dr. Stan, I believe God will touch the conscience of those people that actually know what happened. And it may be 20 or 30 years from now, but when those people are getting ready to meet their maker, I believe the truth will come out.
I hope you're right. Of course, by then, an awful lot of people would have died in the Middle East totally unnecessarily. And of course, I don't think that George Bush will be required to stand before the bar of justice in this life, but I agree with you, in the next life he will. God bless. Thanks so much. And Michael, what are your thoughts on what Bob was saying? And again, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Do you have any comment on what Bob was saying?
Well, you know, Bob brings up some great points, and, you know, these are all points that we've been harping on for literally years now, and as I mentioned in the beginning of the program, there's so much that we could talk about. You know, the put options, the president's behavior at the school in Florida. You know, a lot of people don't know it, but President Bush had said that he actually saw the first plane hit the tower, and you know, on that morning while he was waiting to go into the school. And, you know, I have to ask, you know, how is it possible that he said he saw the plane hit the first tower when this video wasn't even available until the next day? But, you know, there is some encouraging news out there, you know, to kind of address Bob's frustration. You know, a lot of us are feeling that frustration, but, you know, we have to keep going on. We have to keep working to expose this. And 911truth.org had recently sponsored a nationwide Zogby poll. And the results of the poll were pretty amazing. Just a quick overview, 42% of the American public believe that the government is covering up the events of September 11th. And by contrast, only 48% think that they're not covering up. So less than half of the American public are buying the official story now. Another indicator from the poll was that 45% want a new investigation. And probably my favorite part of the poll was where we asked, are you aware of the Building 7 and the collapse of this 47-story skyscraper on September 11th? 43% of the American public stated that they were not aware of Building 7's collapse. And there was, it was something like, let's see, 52% were aware, but a staggering 73% of that subgroup thought that Building 7 should have been investigated, and it literally was not. FEMA came out with their report that said, you know, the only likely explanation has a low probability of occurrence. The 9/11 Commission report just simply failed to mention Building 7. They thought that the collapse of this tower was unworthy of mention at all. So, you know, it's just amazing the media involvement in this, because unless you were actually watching TV at 5:30 in the afternoon on September 11th, you never saw Building 7. And, you know, this brings me back to the point that the media has been so complicit in this that, you know, it's hard for us to get this information out, because so many people around the country think, well, if it's not on the news or if it's not in the papers, it must not be. So,
well, tell me what happened. You had your meeting in Chicago. You said the New York Times wrote an article about it?
Yeah, they wrote an article. It was titled, For 9/11 Conspiracy Buffs, A Chance to Compare Notes. And, you know, it was, they took quite a few swipes at us. I mean, there's some good information in there. I was really impressed with the fact that they included a complete URL to Dr. Jones's paper, Why Indeed Did the World Trade Center Buildings Collapse? But they basically, you know, they tried to delegate us to, you know, this realm of conspiracy buffs, okay? Like this is some sort of hobby to us. No, it's not a hobby to us. This is so vitally important to the future of our country, the future of our children. This couldn't be further from a hobby. Many people across this country have literally devoted their lives to exposing the fraud of September 11th. And so, you know, just the title of the article itself was somewhat demeaning. And, you know, but there's some good information in there. But aside from, you know, appearances in, you know, alternative press, appearances on shows like yours, Dr. Stan, and the alternative media, the mainstream just won't touch it. And, you know, you have to ask yourself, you know, why are the editors not letting this come forward?
Well, I think it should be very, very obvious, because the media in America is controlled. It has been for a long time. And anybody who doubts that needs to get the book, The New Media Monopoly. It's written by a professor at UC who has been studying the control of the media, and he points out that 90 to 95% of the American media is controlled by one of five mega corporations. And they literally control the Time and the Newsweek and U.S. News and ABC and CBS and NBC. And as a result, they essentially control what the American people read, what they see, what they hear, and what they believe. Well, let's go to Charles, who's calling us from Houston. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-1895. Charles, how are you doing tonight?
Great. Enjoy your show. So I was watching actually live that day. I was off work when it all happened, and before the second plane hit the tower, the first had already done, but no one knew it was a plane. It was all kinds of guesses. Was it an atomic bomb? Was it an explosion? Was it a meteorite? You know, these guys had he was facing the camera with the towers in his back to his back, and so if people watching TV could see him, the towers behind him, and so before the second plane hit the tower, they're trying to figure out what happened, and they interviewed a guy there that was part of the maintenance, head of the maintenance. And he said, well, we're lucky it happened when it did, because nobody hadn't got to work yet. If it had waited in half or an hour later, it'd been a whole lot worse situation. And he showed the number of people that worked there, but the way less people than that were there because it was earlier. And then the second plane hit the tower. And then, but now the guy just said how many people would have been killed at that time of day. But then they reported way more than that on the news later, saying enormously, you know, thousands of, I mean, hundreds of people, more people were killed than what he said could have been killed at that time of day. If it had been later in the day, it would have been worse.
Remember, the initial reports, Charles, were that 6,000 people had been killed. You remember that? It was 6,000, and then it was 5,000, and then it was 4,000, and then it was 3,000, and they were supposed to have killed 6,000 because, you know, there were all the employees, about 2,400 or 2,500, in Morgan Stanley in the South Tower. They had two or three floors there, And the man who was in charge of security was running up and down the aisles with a blowhorn saying, "We're under terrorist attack, get out," while the loudspeaker in the South Tower was telling everybody to stay in their seats. There was nothing to worry about. And they could look out the window. They could see the North Tower, you know, on fire, and they could see the people jumping out the windows, and they were ordered to stay in their seats. Had it not been for the man, you know, in charge of security for Morgan Stanley, why, they would have lost their 6,000. That's what they anticipated. And it wasn't until many days later they found out that those people had escaped death. And the question is, why do they keep saying there were 6,000 dead? And it was because they pretty well figured out how many were going to die. I honestly believe or suspect it may have been ahead of time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And also, since this happened, there's been way more Americans murdered in violent ways and raped to death by illegal aliens than what was killed at that time of that day in the Twin Towers.
I see. Illegal aliens. Okay, well, thanks so very much. And let's go to Mark calling from Massachusetts. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how are you, Doctor?
I'm doing fine.
I just had a question about if there was, if your guest there knew anything about the people coming in before they actually emptied out like the 82nd floor in the Twin Towers a couple days before they had it was a fire drill or something, and that was to plant the explosives in there.
Mark, have you know anything at all about that?
I've heard reports about that, although I can't really verify any of that. It's one of those things that I can't really comment on.
And I think there's lots of stories that they were sort of evacuating the building and they were evacuating this, the floors one at a time. I'd heard that. The one thing that I do know is that the man who worked for security in the North Tower, whether he was in charge of it or he just worked for them, was a man named Marvin Bush. The president's other brother. We never hear of. We hear of Jeb. We hear of Neil, but we never hear of Marvin. But you can Google that in, and Marvin Bush, Twin Towers, you'll find out that Marvin Bush worked for the security company that controlled, was in charge of the North Tower. And what a strange coincidence that is, isn't it? Isn't it amazing more people never heard of that?
Yeah.
Anything else, Mark?
No, that's all.
Okay, fine. Do you have any thoughts on that, Michael? Had you heard about Marvin Bush working there in the towers?
Not actually working in the towers, but from what I understand, he was a principal in Securicom, which had the contract for security at the World Trade Center.
Right.
So you know, there's some obvious ties there that are suspicious.
Right,
I do admit.
I think that you're absolutely right. He doesn't actually work there. He was, but he was with the security company that was, in charge of that. And anybody who'd like to check that interesting little tidbit out, all they have to do, of course, is go to Google and Google in Marvin Bush North Tower, and you'll be able to verify what we say. And of course, it just gives you sort of an uneasy feeling that here we have one Bush who's a governor, and another was the president, and another, of course, who was working for the security company that secured the North Tower. And the chances that that would have happened just by coincidence are pretty slim, I would think.
Well, to believe the official story of September 11th, it would demand that you be a coincidence theorist.
I think that's very, very well put. Well, how many people did you have at your Chicago meeting?
Well, the last count I heard was that we had somewhere around 700.
That's pretty good.
So it was a great turnout. We had a lot of great presenters, and I just want to take just a second to thank everybody who helped put that conference on. It was quite an undertaking, and there was a lot of people who were involved in pulling that off and coming and presenting and speaking and donating money and all that. And so It was a huge success, and it was a long weekend of a lot of hard work on a lot of our parts, but real successful, and we're looking forward to taking some of the strategies that we had worked on forward and taking it out into the public, because we have to do this. This is something that we have to do to save our republic.
I think you're absolutely right, because if there was any government complicity in this, if there is any sort of a cover-up, if there are people at the highest levels of our government who allowed this to happen, or maybe even did possibly have explosives in Building 7, then they should be held responsible for the deaths of those people. There is no statute of limitation on murder, and those people who were in the North and the South Tower were murdered. And the question is, who is responsible? Osama bin Laden? If he was really responsible, why haven't we tried to capture him? Why have we never captured Osama bin Laden? We can track anybody else in the world down, but we just can't catch Osama bin Laden. In a 6'5" Arab with a dialysis machine dangling from his wrist. I mean, there's something strong with the story. And I think the American people have to ask ourselves, really, what did the government know ahead of time? Did they have a reason for wanting to have some sort of an incident that would justify getting us into war? And if they did, of course, then how can we get the truth out to the American people? Well, Michael, you've got just 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on the show tonight, Dr. Stan, and it's a pleasure to talk with you and your listeners. It's just so important, as we talked about, so much is being done in our names as the American people under the, I guess, you know, with the events of September 11th being the catalyst. So, you know, when you look at the war in Afghanistan, the war in Iraq, the war against the American people here on, you know, via the Patriot Act and other very intrusive, unconstitutional legislation, you have to realize that, you know, maybe it's time to take a closer look at 9/11. And if you are aware that there's something wrong with the official story, and you are seeing what we're seeing, you really need to get out and take action, because without the action, you know, we're just going to be seeing more of the same. We saw the events at Oklahoma City, which many have called the prelude to 9/11. And when the government got away with Oklahoma City, we got 9/11, and if we let them get away with 9/11, we're going to see something even worse, I fear. And so the bottom line is we have to get out, we have to get involved, and hopefully, you know, your listeners will realize the significance of September 11th and realize the potential that's there to wake people up, because September 11th was the issue that woke me up to a whole slew of other things that are going on in this country. And so we have to put a stop to these criminals who are running our government. And we have to demand that we return to the Constitution and return our country back to the republic that it was meant to be.
And, of course, what we really need to do is limit the power of our intelligence agencies. I do not believe we can trust them. Because, and I would simply point out that after 3,000 Americans were dead, nobody was criticized, nobody was fired, nobody was held responsible. In fact, the President of the United States congratulated George Tenet for a job well done.
Well, many of the leaders were actually promoted.
And, of course, all we can do is simply point out, if you really want to understand the day, you need to get a book called See No Evil by Robert Baird. Baird, who tells you what was actually said, Robert Baird, what the CIA says among themselves. We'll tell you more about that in just a moment. But, Michael, thank you so very much for being with us. Maybe we'll get you on again to one of our other programs.
That's fine, Dr. Stan. I thank you for having me on. Just give me a call.
Good night. God bless.
Thank you.
That was Michael Woolsey from the 9/11 Truth. Well, this is Dr. Stan. If you want to know what really happened that morning, you need to get our three pamphlets on 9/11 foreknowledge, or foreknowledge 9/11. The three pamphlets are made up of my articles that I wrote as the story unfolded. And then, of course, there's the book written by Robert Baer called See No Evil, which we carry, where he quotes one of the highest-ranking people in the CIA as saying, and saying off the record, when the dust is settled after 9/11, the American people will realize that what happened was not a failure of intelligence. It was a triumph of intelligence. when the dust settles after 9-1-1, the American people will understand that what happened was not a failure of intelligence. It was a triumph of intelligence. Ladies and gentlemen, 3,000 Americans were dead. How could that be a triumph? Well, of course, if our purpose was for them to die for a greater good, to justify getting us into a war with Afghanistan and with Iraq, and now I don't know what's going to happen as far as Iran is concerned. I mean, we've made all sorts of concessions. Obviously, somebody is putting pressure on the administration not to go to war with Iran. I hope and pray that that works, that we do not go to war with Iran. But under any circumstances, what happened on 9/11 was used to justify the war with Iraq, Afghanistan, and with Iraq, and changed America forever. So you need to get the information. We have a number of books, The War on Terror, and of course we have Mars book on 9/11. We have Dr. Cuddy's book, Cover Up. We have Paul Thompson's book, Terror Timeline, and my pamphlets on $4.911. That's $4.911. And we have a great deal of other material available from Radio Liberty. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like more information, 1-800-544-8927. If you want to understand the spiritual implications of what's going on, you need to get our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. Because there is an occult hierarchy that rules the world. Certainly my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, will give you insight into that, and you can get the video or the DVD that goes with that. You can get, certainly, Iraq, the Untold Story. And the syllabus that goes with that has Operation Northwood. It has the information from the Project for the New American Century website. You need to get both the DVD and the syllabus to really understand and, of course, Iraq, the Untold Story. And then, of course, if you are concerned about what's happening financially to our country and you want to find to actually survive what lies ahead, you need to get our video or DVD and or syllabus, Financial Tsunami. Financial Tsunami. All can be obtained by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a free newsletter, give us a call. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so, well, until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.